The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
View of the Insight Meditation movement, and I'm going to pause and make a couple of announcements, actually, just to make it hard for Judy. I'll also say for the benefit of the recording that, because it will be on Audio Dharma, that this is not a Dharma talk. It's a talk being given at the 4th annual Intersangha meeting put on by the Buddhist Insight Network, being held here at IMC. So I'd like to give something of an overview that's partly descriptive of what's been happening over the last 30 to 40 years in the Insight Meditation movement, and partly visionary about what can be taken forward as we continue to cultivate the people and the practice and what we're developing in this movement. So I'll begin with the historical part, talking about some of the original founding teachers that brought this practice to us, and then also the conditions that have been built through that, retreat centers, and increasingly more and more communities, and then leaders of those communities. And then talk about some of the further trainings and programs and offerings that we are continuing to develop in order that people can carry this movement forward as it continues over hopefully many more decades. And then maybe the role for the Buddhist Insight Network. And rather than having set conclusions, I think we should end with some questions. So these are some older pictures of some of the pioneering teachers who brought this practice back to us from Asia. And you may recognize some of them. I have their names listed. Can we move this a little bit? And there's also, these are pictures, some of them are old pictures from Inquiring Mind, by the way, which is about a 30-year-old publication. We also have a more of a cartoon version, if you would prefer. But what's really interesting is to see the dramatic growth in the number of lay insight teachers who have been sharing these teachings with us over so many decades. You can see that there was just a handful in 1974, which is not particularly special, except that that was sort of when we started counting for this. And then up to this year, we have 138. And these are teachers that are leading residential retreats. So as something of a timeline, there were teachers in this tradition here in the 60s. A number of them are listed there. And then there was something of a beginning in 1974 when Jack Kornfield and Joseph Goldstein began offering retreats more widely, began traveling around doing that, and eventually founding their centers up to, as you can see here, now about 138 total in the West, and so that includes North America and Europe and Israel. So here are some more modern pictures of the same six teachers that were listed originally. And these are the ones who established the first retreat centers and so founded the institutions that are continuing to transmit these teachings. And in addition, they've trained quite a number of others through the Spirit Rock Teacher Training Program and the IMS program. And of course, we also include not only the original six, but other insight teachers that are offering the same types of teachings, but who received their training from other sources. So this shows some of these retreat centers, the main ones that have been founded and that have been places for people to do the deep practice that was, you know, the original form that the teachings were offered in. You know, the sanghas actually came later. We started as a retreat tradition. And this shows that there were quite a number of them. There were the three original ones that started over the first couple of decades. And now we're just starting to see some others coming in later. Perhaps there will be even more. Those were the U.S. ones. This one shows the European, also about five. I may not have quite all of them, but these are the ones that I'm aware of. Also beginning a little bit later, but then still continuing to grow to the present. All these retreat centers allow us to offer more and more retreats. So these are retreats that are being offered by lay insight teachers. You can see that there was just a handful, around 10, being offered in 1984. That was the first year that we have data, because I got this data from the Inquiring Mind, and that was their founding year. And this is the best single source that we have for data on which retreats have been offered, but probably it's not completely comprehensive, so this would be considered maybe a minimum number of retreats, and there were others that were offered also. But you go up to just a few years ago, having more than 200 retreats being offered in a given year, that's really quite impressive in terms of, you know, being able to receive these teachings in an intensive, silent surrounding. In addition to retreat teachers, we have quite a number of people who are leading community centers or insight sitting groups of various types. Nearly 300, we estimate, have been through the CDL program. That includes this current one. And, of course, there are a number of leaders who have not been officially trained in this way. So this is a beautiful picture of the CDL4 cohort, and pointing out that the emphasis this year was especially on having a diverse set of leaders to go forward and carry the teachings forward. This shows, again, for the United States, superimposed with the retreat centers, the growth in the number of community centers. So places like here, like IMC, that offer more like weekly sittings or other programs in that way. And you can see that initially there were more of the retreat center type, and then in the last decade, there's been tremendous growth in the number of insight centers that are based in communities. And, of course, I may not even have all of them on here. These are buildings that are owned or dedicated spaces. Of course, it doesn't count the hundreds of sitting groups that meet in people's homes or that rent church space. So that's also there. I'd like to mention also that this is a time of great change in the community centers, and that I know of at least 5 groups that are looking for permanent space, either to lease but, you know, have it completely for them, or buy. And so this is, we would expect that these numbers would continue to grow over time. This is showing the sitting groups, so the sort of more broad, anything that doesn't necessarily have to own its own space. And again, I took the source from Inquiring Mind. It's worth noting that the early data might include some Zen groups, because they just listed every sitting group that they knew of. And then you can see tremendous growth all the way up to more than 180 listed there. And my guess is that there are many more than that who just didn't feel the need to list themselves in Inquiring Mind broadly. And so we can estimate that there are actually quite a great deal more than that. So this is, again, tremendous growth. So I hope what all these slides are pointing toward again and again is that this is a huge swelling of interest and swelling of energy and swelling of good intention that is really leading in a beautiful direction, and that we can together shape. I also have a little bit of data about the practitioners who are coming to these centers and who are coming on the retreats and who are themselves embodying the teachings in their lives. The information I'm going to present is from IMC's community survey done in 2009, not because we believe it's necessarily representative, but it is quite a recent and quite a large survey. And so with that caveat, I'll present a few of the results. We had 322 respondents to our survey, 242 of which come to this physical center, and 80 of which said that they knew IMC only through online sources such as Audio Dharma. So that in itself is interesting, right? There's 80 people out there who responded to a fairly lengthy survey, even though they've never been to IMC, just because they felt connected to it through online teachings. And I'm not going to go through lots and lots of results, even though we got tons of data. I just want to highlight the significant number of mature students and longtime practitioners. So this asks the question in the way, How long have you been involved with any Buddhist organization or teacher? And you can see that over 30% have had that situation for more than 10 years. It's quite interesting to have, you know, a group where that's the case. And then the next slide is a little also dramatic. How long have you been practicing meditation? So you can see that more than 20% of the people who associate themselves with IMC have been practicing for more than 15 years. That may not be typical, again, but it's worth knowing that these folks are there as practitioners in the community, and that we have, you know, a large number of people who are exerting such a positive influence on our groups in that way. And I thought this was interesting also, worth pointing out, is that we asked people how they identify. And about two-thirds of the people who responded to the survey said that they were Buddhist. So that says that a third said that they weren't Buddhist. So that also provides a little bit of interesting data. I don't quite know how to interpret all of this, but it's worth, I think, worth knowing, you know, how people are talking about themselves. So given all of that as a kind of a backdrop, a setting, we can look at ways that we're further developing all these people who are bringing their good energy and their good practice to what we're doing, to the Insight Meditation Movement. This is a little bit of an eye chart, but it's a long list of the existing programs, and I'm sure there are others, but at major centers for offering training and other academic degree programs for people who are wanting to dedicate themselves to a deeper education or a deeper training in this tradition. So Spirit Rock alone has had quite a few. The teacher training program, of course, began in 1985. That's what trained those 80 to 100 additional Dharma teachers. And then the CDL program began 15 years ago. And so forth through the DPP, yoga and meditation teacher training, path of engagement. I didn't put ritual ministers on there, but that's also been in existence for a few years. And there are programs through Barry Center for Buddhist Studies and also the Sati Center, including the new Sati Institute for Theravada Studies that is a Buddhist studies degree that actually includes the Theravada tradition explicitly. I also put the Mindful Awareness Research Center on there because they're beginning to offer degrees in secular mindfulness, and that's kind of a different direction. Barry Center for Buddhist, BCBS, offers one also. So all of these people who have been practicing for a long time are finding ways to integrate and express the Dharma through their lives. And this is definitely not all the options, but I put down some of the common ones that people often go forth into the world with, if you will. Dharma teaching of various sorts, and then other kinds of secular mindfulness. There was a large movement of people who went into MBSR during the 90s when that was being promoted by Jon Kabat-Zinn. Out in this area, of course, Bob Stahl has done wonderful work in that area. People have gone into hospice. There are now chaplaincy options for people, more and more ways that they can be endorsed by their sangha or even ordained as Buddhist ministers is starting to become possible, and various forms of engaged Buddhism, and then also one-on-one work in psychology or in coaching, other ways of working with people individually to help them re-envision and live their lives more skillfully in various ways. That includes social work, and there are more and more options for the academics also. And then I just left one open at the end because there's a lot of creativity in this area and people finding more and more ways to be the Dharma, if you will. But it brings up questions for continuing this process, continuing the cultivation of the seed that was planted so many decades ago. So as we go forward and we begin to transition from the initial set of founding teachers to a broader set of a larger number of teachers that have been trained by them, we can ask questions about how can we have an ongoing development of retreat teachers, community teachers, secular mindfulness kinds of instructors, chaplains, sangha leaders, meaning those who administrate sanghas, because more and more sanghas are large enough that they need an administrative component. We also, and along those same lines, community teachers will need assistance in setting up and managing a center like this, which is a very different skill set than, say, teaching a retreat. So we have different, sort of more diverse kinds of trainings that are needed. Regular teacher meetings are interesting. Currently, the teachers from Spirit Rock, IMS, and Gaia House get together every 3 years, roughly. And there's also a larger meeting for all Western Buddhist teachers that happens maybe once a decade. But now we have 138 teachers, and not all of them are, certainly, you know, only a small number of those are, say, on the teachers' board at Spirit Rock, and so teachers' council. And so the question is, how can we create teacher meetings for these other folks who aren't as directly connected? In addition, people are seeking deeper study in suttas, in Buddhist studies, in Pali. Now it's up to us to continue those traditions in whatever way makes sense for us as Westerners, but to keep to some of those deeper roots that go back in the Theravada tradition. And in addition, finding ways for people to collaborate and figure out how to express the Dharma in their lives. So this is meant to just provide an image for all of that along the agriculture theme, and maybe spark some ideas of, you know, actually the Buddha himself used the image of controlling where the water goes in different rice fields as a way of promoting skillful behavior. So you look at your intention and you allow the intention to flow if it looks like it's going in the right direction, in the same way that a farmer would choose to flood a certain field and not, you know, not send water to another one. So in the same way, we have those choices as we go forward in creating the next generation of the insight meditation movement. So there may be a role. One of the things that's come forward as possibly an expression of the Dharma in the world is that we've created this Buddhist Insight Network. You know, that wasn't the creation of any one person. It's the creation of everyone who comes and participates and puts their energy into things like this and into people who are on the BIN board. So this seems to be a response. And I want to point out that it's not something that was just created recently. It was first talked about over a decade ago, probably among the CDL1 people. And so this was a good idea. It had an intention, but maybe it wasn't quite the right time. It was worked on also over the last half decade, particularly by Spirit Rock, and also by a group of teachers, some of whom were affiliated with Spirit Rock and IMS also. But this particular form that's been hosting the Intersangha meeting and that has now been incorporated as a nonprofit was born from a discussion actually at the 2010 Intersangha meeting a couple years ago. And it's wonderful to see it coming forward and strengthening over time. And one focus that it's had is to initially focus on the people like are in this room. So leaders of groups that are doing, some people here are teaching, some people here are doing more administrative work. But generally these are people from community centers who have taken on leadership roles, who have been recognized for their ability to have some organizing ability on the Sangha. And the groups who have been included are basically those who self-identify with what BIN is doing. You know, we haven't laid down rules necessarily, and we don't have a formal membership, but we're hoping that organically we're going to gather the people who are the most suited and the most interested in growing this movement. So to show that somewhat pictorially, I've arrayed, this is a little simplified, but you know, this is places that we practice, retreats and now community centers, and different types of people. So we have the retreat teachers, some of whom are also community teachers, and then we have community teachers who are just doing that. And then there are other Sangha leaders, not in a teaching role, and the many practitioners. And of course, all of us are practitioners also, so we all get to be the red dots too. And the initial range is, as I said, the people that we focused on are mostly the community teachers and the leaders, but there are other options. That has, of course, also been the domain of the Intersangha meeting, which is how BIN started. But I want to point out that BIN has then a broader possibility of including, for example, through special programs and other meetings that we put together, kind of a wider set of people. And then In addition, the whole community itself, we really intend to encompass everybody who wants to identify as being part of the Insight Meditation movement. And that can happen because we'll have a website presence and maybe some other programs that end up fitting everybody. But that's the, you know, that's the scope, that's the intention for being able to be quite inclusive with what we're doing. There are many ways that BIN can support the Insight Meditation movement. Initially, what we've been doing, of course, is facilitating the sharing of information and support between the centers and the sitting groups. So we'll start with where we are. However, the intention has always been also to, and you know, maybe even primarily, to provide support for Insight teachers, for the teacher trainees who are coming up, for community leaders, and for the whole diverse population of practitioners. So to make sure that we're serving, you know, we're a service organization to help others. In particular, there are many talented individuals in BIN who could be available to give guidance on things like organizational development, governance, or ethics and reconciliation if there are conflict situations in growing groups. This would be a possibility for an umbrella, maybe that's a strange word, but a larger organization to play a role in helping us to shape our communities in healthy ways. More on the technical end, we're creating an internet archive of information that's useful. We can compile resources like curricula for programs, information about how to become a 501c3, all kinds of potential training materials, materials that are useful for chaplains, others that are serving in the Buddhist community. We already have some media-type things, such as the BIN newsletter, the website, which launched last night. How about that? And we do intend to include a directory and retreat schedules so that people can have all kinds of information relevant for their practice life also through the BIN website. And then on the practical end, of course, we always need expertise in financial, legal, technology, insurance kinds of things. So this website is now live, and it has some basic information about BIN, and as well as a resource that we're offering, in particular this informational report on diversity programs that are related to race and ethnicity. And we'll be handing out hard copies of that at tomorrow's diversity session, but in addition, it's available in PDF form on the website right now. We have a number of volunteer needs as we go forward, and particularly related to the website. And we would like to have a graphic designer. I'm just doing a little advertisement here. A graphic designer and a requirements manager. Not so much necessarily that we expect that people in this room have that ability, but if you're so moved, you may mention it in your sangha. And the hope is that we would find somebody in that way through the resources of our community to help. This is a chance to help out. So after all that, it really doesn't seem appropriate to give a bunch of set conclusions because so much is in process. It's just, you know, we've planted the seed, it's begun to grow, we've watered the soil, and it's really up to us what happens next. So there are a number of useful questions maybe to think about for all of us to consider today, and also we'll talk about them through the weekend, and I hope in addition you'll find ways to bring them back into all of your individual communities. So in particular, what ideas and visions do you have? You know, what inspires you here to, as we consider going forward with the Insight Meditation movement? What provides coherence and mutual identity? We come here thinking that we have our individual issues in our sanghas, and we find out that actually almost everybody is struggling with the same thing. And so there's, or, you know, is inspired by the same thing, has, and we have things to offer that is very helpful to somebody else. Somewhere in all of that, there's a sense, right? We know that we're somehow working together on the same project. We don't necessarily know what it is and be able to say it clearly, but there's some kind of a mutual identity that already exists. And I want to find a way for us to tap into that and to feel all of that together. What resources would be helpful to develop as we go forward? This could be in the form of programs, the other things that we mentioned in terms of how can we set up more meetings, how can we share things online, what would be useful to have in administratively. All those questions are things that I hope we might consider? And then how can future teachers, leaders, and practitioners be best developed? Because really, we're about the people. None of this happens without all the wonderful people who have passed from warm hand to warm hand this practice down for a long time and, you know, continuing a long time into the future. So, continuing concord in the Sangha is our continuing hope, and I hope very much that all of our good efforts and intentions will make this to be a really fruitful meeting and also to be supportive to everyone who's here and by extension, everyone who's represented by us being here. Thank you all. There's a little bit of time left if we had any questions or comments.
This is very specifically to the people who are working on BIN. I'm wondering if you have thought about social networking in terms of, you know, like day-to-day ongoing interactive communications. There are some very good ones out there.
So, is it on here? So I've been working with Kim on the website with our designer, Steve, and really seriously, look at the website and tell me if we need a graphics designer or what. We really do, okay? Be honest. But yeah, a website isn't anymore something that you build and people come. The way that current, you know, people my age, people younger than me, people way younger than me are going to find it is through social networks. So it's absolutely right. And it's funny you should say that because as I'm sitting here listening to Kim, I'm thinking we need another volunteer position, which is we need somebody, once the website is up and running, to pull the pithy little pieces from the Dharma or from a talk or whatever. And just it's those little things that can engage people right now. That's what's happening. In addition to blogging and things like that, things that can, people are entering websites from the side or from the bottom, not from the top. So it's something that we're definitely thinking about how we can do once it gets to that bigger circle. I think it's a phased approach, so it's not something that's a high priority right now, but we're trying to design the website with that kind of end goal in mind, even if it's not going to be implemented right away. All that said, very interested to hear all kinds of ideas that people here have about how to do that well.
Yeah, I was just thinking about it in terms, the website tends to be somewhat static in terms, you know, you go there for information. And I was thinking about for a group like this, where there's so much information to exchange, you know, that kind of Facebook-style interactivity might be a place to solve problems immediately between ourselves.
Thank you.
Send out a survey. And I was wondering, are there any specific questions that were asked that really modified what you were doing, modified an approach, modified a class, or?
Well, as a broad answer, I'd be totally happy to send you all the survey questions that we used. Okay.
Well, the first survey was done in like 1995, and the big thing there that was found out from that survey, people wanted a yoga program. So we started a yoga program. The next survey was done a number of years later, and the big thing people wanted there was a Sunday program. And at that time, we didn't have a building, so it took a while to find a place. We finally did find a place. But this latest survey, remember, you and I talked about, there wasn't anything clear that jumped out of what people wanted from this latest survey. But it was good information. We figured we had to do it because we hadn't done one in so long.
Thank you.
As I was listening to you talk, it seemed clear that that Ben is framing the conversation about the insight meditation movement, that sort of what I would call like a strand within Theravada. And I'm wondering if there's been conversation about that connection to other strands of Theravada in the West and kind of how, you know, this is my first time here, so I'm just wondering, I'm trying to place this and curious about that piece.
That's a great point to bring up because we're very much in that process, and there are other strands that could be considered, you know, part of the Theravada. The idea is that, in a sense, we need to gather ourselves, and then at that point, that makes the conversation with other strands meaningful. You know, without this initial sense of our own identity, if I can use that word, then it's hard to relate in a meaningful way. And not only with vision, of course, is not only with other groups that are in a similar tradition, but why not Zen or Tibetan and then, of course, other religions. So that's the trajectory that we're on. Yeah. Okay, good. Well, definitely the conversation is not over in the sense of, you know, the rest of the weekend and ongoing after that is that we want to keep this going. And in fact, the next session that we have is going to delve more deeply into the four reflection questions that are up here. And we'll look at them specifically in relation to our own groups and then share in a larger group how we're thinking about them at this time. And you may find by the end of the weekend your position has changed. So thank you very much.
I'm sorry, Kim, maybe it's premature, but could you say something about how we might join or support Buddhist Insight Network? Are there ways to donate? Are there ways to offer? Whatever. So.
Wow, with a segue like that. Yeah, well, in a broad sense, we're looking for volunteers to help us put together the resources that we need to share with other groups. And then in addition, yes, of course, there are ways to offer Donna, and I'll say more about that at a later time in the conference. Yeah. Okay, we'll just be staying in this room for the next session, so just hang on for a moment while we transition to that. Oh, and I should say that for the sessions that we're having, it would be helpful if we could have a scribe.